Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Film Chat, a podcast that reveals the secrets hidden in our modern world. For example, witches are real. That's the main one. 800 years ago, a witch hunter named Danny Moran defeated the Witch Queen. But as she died, she cursed him with immortality, which is bad, although it has an obvious upside. Now in the present day, she's back, and Danny will need a whole lot of runes, scrolls, and muscles to take her down, is what I would be saying if this was a podaptation of the 2015 movie The Last Witch Hunter, starring Vin Diesel and Michael Caine. Instead, it's just a podcast in which we talk about and review films. I'm Sam Foster, and joining me, a strapping hero who has been eating 50 chickens a day for the best part of the last millennium, Danny Moran.
Hello. On this week's episode, Sam reviews the latest high-octane entry into the Fast and Furious franchise, The Fate of the Furious. I'll be asking him what the action scenes were like on a scale of impossible to in-frickin-sanity. Ask him how big the muscles were on a scale of natural to uncanny valley. And ask him whether the bums were nice bums. Were the bums nice?
I can confirm ahead of my review that there's very nice bums.
Great. Then, we review bona fide classic One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which has recently been re-released in cinemas. It doesn't have the same number of bum shots as the Fast and Furious series, but it's just as, and some might argue slightly more, emotionally powerful. Plus, we dissect the tread of a Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, in forensic detail, and we dance magic dance for joy at the news there'll be another Labyrinth movie. All of which should leave me just enough time before my latest impression, Buster Keaton, watching all of Diane Keaton's films in a row while listening to the greatest hits of Ronan Keaton.
You always think of baseball players when you're making love?
It keeps me going.
Oh, Michael. Michael, you are blind.
Oh, God, what a dumb thing to say, right? I mean, you say it, you play well, and then right away I have to say you play well.
Wait a minute, I don't understand. You are my therapist?
I'm a woman.
He is my husband.
Wow. Wow, it's perfect. It's just like the real guy. What the faces Danny is pulling matches the description he gave. Identically. Extraordinary performance. If only this was being captured on webcam, like Kermode's show. Why, where's the live stream when you need one?
Films, 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 lots of films, 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 films. These are good films, bad films, fun films, sad films, films we love, weird films, Lars von Trier films, old films, new films, some John Woo films, films that star Peter Finch, films by David Lynch, films short films, 6 hours long. We've got films up to your gills with films, 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 movies. Are you feeling comfortable? Film Chat has begun.
So last week, 114 episodes into the podcast, and surprisingly the very first appearance of Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, who is a cultural icon and someone who's very important in both Danny and I's, my lives. Very important to us. Taught us a lot about dressing yourself and your house and decor and all that kind of thing. And we were talking about whether he's left-wing or right-wing figure. I naturally imagine that he was a bit of a Tory, and Danny thought perhaps he was left-wing.
Yeah.
And so we took to the internet to find this question out, and Danny tweeted Lawrence directly.
Yeah,
he's you can do that now. It's fun.
Exactly. That's the great thing about Twitter.
Yeah, you can talk to anyone.
So I tweeted at Llewellyn Bowen, Lawrence, me and a friend of mine were debating whether politically you lean left or right. Can you clarify for us? To which he replied, genuinely, ... my tailor is the only one who knows to which side I dress. So Tory, do you reckon?
It's very close to his
chest. A response
there.
Like that?
Well, do you think? I mean, yeah, it doesn't. It's not the sort of man of the people type response.
It's a bit Poncy.
A bit. Well,
the reply of a Ponce.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when he's going to the interior decor home emporiums and conferences and stuff, and giving people advice, he doesn't want it to be them to be affected by thinking about his political leanings. You know, he just wants to keep his work and his politics separate, and I can respect that.
But he came to prominence, think about this, on Changing Rooms.
Yeah.
And that was a show based on the idea that with just a few good creative ideas and a little bit of money, you can transform any room. So even though his day job might be, you know, playing to the bourgeois masses, that was a, you know, a show for the proletariat.
Well, because you don't need a lot of money. It's not like Grand Designs or something.
Exactly.
It's a show for the elite.
Yeah, Changing Rooms was a show for the common man.
A show for the common man, because it's like, oh, you just need a couple of lampshade hangings, different, you know.
Yeah.
Switch the cushion brand that you've been using to a different one.
Different cushion brand, that's your sort.
Yeah. 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 But weren't they like always quite sort of kind of exciting? You know, it wasn't like some sort of feng shui type, just put the sofa over here. It was like,
yeah,
you know, just quite radically different look.
I've turned the floor into an ice rink. Don't question it. I'm a genius.
Was it like Pimp My Ride, but for rooms?
Yeah, Pimp My Room.
Pimp My Room, basically.
Presented by Tim Westwood, Carol Smiley. They're kind of the same person.
Yeah, they're very similar. They're very, very similar.
Anyway, this is a film podcast.
Yeah, but let it never be said that you and I can't just have a very culturally literate conversation about many other topics.
It's true.
There need to be nothing stilted or awkward or uninformative about us holding forth on other subjects such as home decoration and, you know, TV stars from the 90s.
Of course. We didn't get any other correspondence apart from James Andrews, who just sent me a gif of Quirrell fainting from the Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone movie. There's a bit where Quirrell, played by Ian Hart, faints in a reference to me fainting in Raw.
Pretty, I see.
Pretty cruel gif he sent me.
Very cruel.
Quirrell in the dungeon! Quirrell in the dungeon!
Thought you ought to know.
Not very...
Thanks, James.
A bit insensitive. Yeah.
But the moment I saw that, I fainted again.
Did Well, I was going to ask if he... provided a content warning with that.
No, you got to give me some trigger warnings, guys. I'm a delicate little flower.
Especially now.
I'm actually wondering, because there was definitely a point where I didn't cry that much in films, and I feel like a few years ago, just a sort of valve switched, and now I just kind of cry. I kind of look forward to it, really.
I enjoy it. I actually think that's kind of true of me as well. I mean, I've been crying in, you know, movies for a good decade, I would say. But, like, I think, like, growing up when I was a kid, I didn't really. Maybe I just wasn't... I just didn't give a shit. I wasn't really invested. I just didn't care. Now I'm watching them properly. I wonder what it's going to be like, watching movies after I've had a child or something like that.
Oh, God.
It's going to be a nightmare. I don't think I'll be able to watch anything without just constantly bursting into tears.
Once you're a kid, your whole brain's rewired to just feel more
just
empathy,
make
right?
You a total fucking loser, basically. Total weeping at everything.
Pussy cuck snowflake.
Total pussy. Yeah.
Ugh.
I think this is the general, you know, it's both that kind of biological thing, and also you just get a bit older and you just get a bit more like sensitive to the weight of the world.
Sure.
You relate to things. When I was a kid, I didn't really relate to anything because I hadn't had any of those experiences.
That's true.
And now, you know, I've been there myself. Yeah. And when I watch these touching films, I can imagine myself in that position as an adult.
Yeah.
And it's a way of kind of proving my own humanity. I know that I seem out of touch, swanning about on my cloud of privilege, but did you see the bucket of tears I just cried in that film?
So it was signal crying.
Signal crying. Virtue signal.
Virtue signal crying.
Yeah, I stand up in the cinema, and I turn around to face everyone else, and I just have the front of my...
I'm crying!
And I wear like a white shirt, and it's just absolutely soaked, and you can see my nipples through it, and I'm just covered in tears, and everyone knows. They're like, this guy, he gets it. he's the most normal one here.
Got a little sexy there in the middle. this fantasy scenario.
Yeah, I did get a little sexy. I also did because I think it looks hot.
It's like Darcy coming out of the lake in Pride and Prejudice in the 90s.
Yeah, if you don't have a lake to hand or a rainstorm, like at the end of Four Weddings, you just cry one out.
Yeah.
Cover yourself in water. You just got to make your own sexy water.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Men look better wet. I've often said
men
this.
Men look a lot better wet. I like, a lot of the time I try, when I go on a date, I like to make sure I've just got out of the shower and I'm still wet. So I try to get a bit of that.
Yeah.
Bit of that moisture on the face and hair and clothes.
This is a good tip.
Yeah. So that's this little, see, it's, we, you know, not just home decoration, but also dating tips, sexy dating tips for you.
Absolutely.
What were we talking about?
Superhero films announced, casting rumors leaking out. M. Night Shyamalan's film is hated. Paul Thomas Anderson's is fated. Meryl Streep's Oscar tipped. Matt Damon's in a viral vid. Michael Bay's made a mint. That's the news that's fit to print.
One of the most beloved children's movies of recent times, I say recent times, 31 years ago, is Labyrinth. It feels like that's a movie which has stood the test of time and is maybe a bit more poignant now that Bowie's left us.
Yeah.
Obviously he played Jagriff, the Goblin King. And in the 1986 original, Jennifer Connelly had to babysit her baby brother and she was like, I don't want to do this. I wish someone would just take him away. But then her prayer was answered and Jagriff, the Goblin King, took him away, prompting her to go in a sort of magical Alice in Wonderland / Wizard of Oz / every fairy tale ever journey with
it's
Jim
like,
Henson.
It's like Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like fun.
But fun, and with some of Bowie's best songs.
Mm.
Don't quote me on that. And 31 years later...
Not for the poster, that one. That's for your ears only.
31 years later, they're going to make a sort of sequel, and it's going to be directed by Fede Alvarez, who is the director of the Evil Dead remake, last year's horror smash, Don't Breathe, and he's helming the upcoming Girl the Spiderweb, which is weirdly the fourth book in the trilogy not written by Stieg Larsson.
Yeah.
He's going to have a whole new cast. On the matter, Alvarez said the following.
Labyrinth is one of the seminal movies from my childhood that made me fall in love with filmmaking. I couldn't be more thrilled to expand on Jim Henson's mesmerizing universe and take a new generation of moviegoers back into the Labyrinth.
And so no real story details or anything other than it's just going to be another Labyrinth movie, which
can
pretty...
be one of these weird modern spin-off sequel reboots, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say the movie itself, the original movie is so sort of vague and open-ended to begin with that you could easily make a sequel which bears no little relation. They just go to a place with magical stuff and puppets.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all of it.
Like, I think that would be my guess. Is that it's going to be a kind of, you know, return to the world of Labyrinth, but it's going to be another kidnapped child and a young person who's looking for them and, you know, puppets and dancing and music.
Yeah.
Like, so that sort of quasi remake that they like to do now.
I guess, though, because it's puppets, they can have the same characters, even if the original puppeteers and voices are no longer with us. They can have, what's his name, Sidious and Ambrosia, the posh fox who rides a horse, not a horse, a dog. He rides a dog. That's why it's funny. If he rode a horse, actually, that'd also be funny.
That would also be funny.
I guess the big question, though, this Labyrinth reboot sequel thing is who's going to be the Bowie character, assuming they have one?
Big shoes to fill.
St. Vincent? That'd be cool.
Yeah. Or Jermaine Clement. Or both.
Jermaine Clement. Or
both, like, alternately. In each scene they swap out.
Or the rapper Labyrinth.
Yes, the rapper Labyrinth would
and there could be a bit where he causes an earthquake and plays Earthquake and, like, you know, the whole Labyrinth starts splitting apart and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold up.
Well, he's a musician, that's true. So
note
does...
to self, a brilliant Labyrinth Earthquake idea.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they do go down the route of getting another musician.
Yeah.
Actually, they could. I mean, getting Jermaine Clement would even solve that problem. I wonder if they will pick him.
Yeah, just get Jermaine to do it.
Just get Jermaine to do it.
Also,
though I would love to say Vincent.
Also, this is a great idea because Britt obviously did the Muppets movie, so he's got a relationship with the
Jim Henson. Songs for puppets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Henson Company and the Flight of the Conchords are already acquainted.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Oh my God.
Come on.
We cracked this wide open.
We basically know how the film is going to be.
Oh my God, this is brilliant.
We've got it completely set, like planned out already.
Yeah.
So don't bother going to see it. Don't bother trying to listen to us review it, because essentially the film has been made and essentially we have seen it. What did you think?
3 stars?
Yeah, it was all right. Speaking of earthquakes, Danny, there was a cinematic trailer earthquake that hit the other day. Everyone was absolutely transfixed. But huge news. News trailer for the next Star Wars film has appeared.
Whoa.
It's called The Last Jedi. We've known that for a while. Everyone threw like a global shit fit when that new name was announced, because people love names. I mean, in the sort of scale of Star Wars titles, it lands on that kind of more important, sort of resonant sounding thing rather than mildly silly, what the fuck does that mean? Kind of, like Attack of the Clone style. So strong title. Everyone was excited for the teaser. They dropped it during the middle of their Star Wars celebration. And there are people who probably queued for like 3 days straight in order to be able to watch it in a hall while it was like simultaneously being live streamed to YouTube, so anyone could watch it as well. I watched it. I'm not super invested in the Star Wars universe, so I didn't have the geekgasm that many might have. I think I found it slightly disappointing, maybe, in that it felt like it was very consciously trying to ape the teaser for The Force Awakens, which seemed a bit strange.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Our friend Dan made this remark, which is very true, which is like, just feels like all the shots they'd finished, in that it's unlike any other trailer because everybody is going to go see this film already.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to sell you anything.
It's just going
to
be a bit evocative.
Yeah. I mean, there's literally a shot of a book for like 5 seconds that people are like, oh my God, the book. What does the book mean? And no other franchise could do that. Yeah, I know what you mean. It was very much like the Force Awakens, and suddenly somebody comes into frame.
Well,
and
someone
then
cut together a sort of side-by-side comparison, which was a bit like had been fiddled with a little bit, because there wasn't a real like Force Awakens trailer. It was just kind of sort of the trailer, but sort of just other similar shots. But still, it was hard to deny that there's like a lot of, it's like the exact same kinds of shots, and also in a deliberate way, like they're consciously trying to remind you. And that seems really, really weird. Like, that's just a weird decision, I think, to me. And a slightly worrying one, in that, like, have we already reached the point where we're so nostalgic for The Force Awakens, a film that came out, like, 18 months ago, that we're trying to recapture the magic?
Yeah, yeah.
Of a film which was itself trying to recapture the magic of another film.
It's true.
It's like, what the fuck? Just move forwards, please.
Culture's eating itself. Some sort of
Ouroboros. It's getting too... Yeah, it's just folding in on itself to a terrifying and sort of unnerving degree. But I don't know. I felt kind of neutral about it. Some of the shots were quite cool in it.
The salt planes, the things racing across the salt planes was cool.
Yeah, all that sort of little bit Mad Maxy with the kind of colored smoke billowing.
Yeah. I'm always just like a fan of just Star Wars in new environments. It's almost be hard now to tick, they've ticked them off. Like, we've done ice, we've done deserts, we've done forests. Where haven't we been? Salt planes. Okay, let's set some stuff there.
Yeah,
I agree. I'm sort of excited by the prospect of like old man Mark Hamill.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think he's an underrated actor. I think he's actually really good in those original movies, especially in the third one when he sort of turns up and he's all a bit haunted and wearing black. You're like, what's happened to Luke? He's all kind of, what's happened? And one of the things I found a bit disappointing about Force Awakens is the way they sort of reset Han Solo. So he's just sort of Han Solo in A New Hope, literally like dressed the same. And like his cool arc from the movie was kind of erased, or like, you know, they kind of backpedaled on it.
I love smuggling again.
Yeah.
I love smuggling. I still love it.
I'm still that parsec run. I'm still pretty
good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas if the implication is that Luke has, the character's moved on a bit and Mark Hamill have some good material to chew with. I like old man disillusioned Luke Skywalker is quite a cool prospect.
Yeah, definitely. He's not jabbering about getting the power converters.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of grumbling about like important old man stuff.
Yeah, and it's just cool in the way, you know, there's a spate of these franchises that run on too long and people return to years later. But it does have a certain, something you can't fake about, that guy was, you know, young 40 years ago and now he's become Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
That's kind of, kind of unique in cinema. Yeah. Like, it's 40 years later, he's like, oh my God, the 19-year-old is now the old wise man. It's
different enough to be interesting that, by the way, I apologize if you can hear a plane. We're recording under a flight path today on an airstrip. So there may be some noise interference.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
But I think it's different in that because it has so much cultural cachet, they can purely advertise on the basis of you will get to experience the next Star Wars film and they don't need to do anything else. And so the whole atmosphere of the way that the movie is sold is kind of different, that it doesn't try to tell you that the movie is really exciting. It simply is like teasing you the fact that this movie exists.
It exists. It's
very, I mean, the whole thing is very, very J.J. Abrams, to be honest.
I'm making a film.
I wonder if that's part of why he was such a good fit for the franchise, is because his whole thing is offering you this sort of glimmer of a great experience you're going to have without telling you anything about it. And that's like a great fit for an established franchise that doesn't need to do anything except sort of tease you about its own existence.
That's true. But I'm hopeful. Rian Johnson, I think, is the coolest. It's kind of weird because when they announced that Disney had bought Star Wars, you're like, oh, they're going to have their pick of like any director in the world is going to want to do it. But it feels like they haven't really got a crop of A-list directors, I would say. Yeah. The directors have hired. Rian Johnson's by far the best out of the list, I would say, easily, based on his previous films.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a very exciting... He's like, of all of them, he's the director who you think it'd be so exciting to see him on a bigger canvas.
Yeah, and exactly. And it's just like, even if you remove Star Wars from the equation, it's like, whose next film would you rather see? J.J. Abrams, Colin Trevorrow's, or Rian Johnson's?
Oh,
it would be Rian Johnson's.
Absolutely,
so, high hopes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sam and Danny both watched a film and they decided to record a few opinions on the things they saw. You're gonna hear them in a moment or so. There could be angry disagreements, but their views are normally quite close.
A joint review shared between two podcast brothers. Do they let one another speak or do they interrupt each other? The light is on, the guys are in, so let the chat begin.
So, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, generally considered to be one of the best ones ever made, but is it really?
Is it?
It's been released by the BFI because it's the 42nd anniversary of it being released. I don't know why. Maybe they just found the print somewhere in the basement and like, we should spruce this up and re-release it. If you've not seen it, it's directed by Milos Forman and written by Lawrence Hoban and Bo Gorman, based on the book by Ken Kesey. And it's set in the early 60s where Jack Nicholson plays Randall P. McMurphy, who is an inmate at a work farm prison where he's serving time for statutory rape. And he's taken to a local mental hospital to be psychologically evaluated because people think he's crazy. And there's a general suspicion that he's just faking it to get out of this work farm. And he's put on a ward with people with more overt mental health issues, run by one of cinema's greatest villains, Nurse Ratched, played by Louise Fletcher. And McMurphy's personality and behavior cause turmoil on the ward, much to Nurse Ratched's chagrin, but actually to the benefit of the other patients.
Now they're telling me I'm crazy over here because I don't sit there like a goddamn vegetable. Don't make a bit of sense to me. If that's what being crazy is, then I'm senseless, out of it, gone down the road, wacko. But no more, no less. That's it.
Well, to be honest with you, McMurphy, what it says here is that they think you've been faking it in order to get out of your work detail.
Well,
what do you
like,
think about that?
Do I look like that kind of guy to you, Doc?
Well, let's just be frank for a minute.
All right, Randall,
if you would, tell me, do you think there's anything wrong with your mind, really?
Not a thing, Doc. I'm a goddamn marvel of modern science.
So this movie is generally be considered to be amazing. And I watched it many years ago and I rewatched it again yesterday. And I was like, it is like one of the best films ever. Everything about it is great. It was kind of fun to watch. It's like The Godfather or something, where every scene is like, oh, it's this scene.
Right, yeah.
Because they're all so amazing.
Yeah, this is definitely, it's a bit like when you review Taxi Driver, to be honest. Because I think I actually probably saw them around the same time, when I was like a teenager, and it was just one of the classics that cropped up, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I don't you know, have a super great memory, you know, so I'm going to be relying on you saying the smart stuff about it. But I remember finding it a very emotional movie. And
yeah.
You know, we were talking earlier about how we cry more in movies now than we used to. And I think that's probably one of the first movies that I saw that really got to me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The end's got a very powerful ending, and I didn't know how it ended. So it was really unexpected to me. And also, like, not just emotional and, you know, the sense of making you sad, but the extent to which I hated Nurse Ratched was... I think it felt like a more powerful desire for the villain to be defeated than in, like, any other film, you know?
Yeah.
I just really wanted her to lose.
Yeah, when I was writing notes for this, I discovered it had this really interesting production history where when the book came out, Kirk Douglas read it and instantly optioned it and then turned it into a Broadway play, which was hugely acclaimed. And then for whatever reason, couldn't mount a film production to the point that he got too old for the role and gave the rights to his son, Michael Douglas, who ended up producing the movie. And knowing this afterwards, you can sort of see how it would work as a play because it's mainly set in this mental hospital with very few, there's like a couple of stuff outside, but it lends itself to a theatrical production. But it's remarkable how unstagey it is. And it's a real case of when people say something cinematic, and I'm sort of guilty of this, I think of it in a sort of slightly reductive, like landscapes and close-ups and bombastic soundtracks and Mad Max Fury Road, that's cinema.
Yes.
But it's a real testament to how it's not film theatre. And so much of the storytelling is in the performances, and so much of it is in reaction shots. They have all these ensemble scenes. There's like this scene at the beginning where like Jack Nicholson doesn't say anything for 15 minutes, but it keeps on cutting to him and all these other great supporting players. And there's so much, they're doing all the heavy lifting of the storytelling. And it's kind of like a testament to how good the cast is that they're all unknowns when they made this movie and they're all kind of super famous now. It's like, oh, it's Danny DeVito and Christopher Lloyd and Brad Dourif.
Yeah,
but they're all like 25 in it. And they're very unshowy performances and very well-rounded. And you think, especially when you're playing someone with like mental health issues, it's so easy for that to go wrong. I like Danny DeVito. It could easily be like just a collection of tics. Like his character Mancini smiles a lot and doesn't understand the rules of poker. But it's such a complete little character throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And you can like easily, one of the joys of rewatching is that you could probably just like follow one of the guys in the background and they're always like doing stuff.
Yeah, you got to be careful about doing those things sensitively, you know, and like making them seem like real characters rather than just like wacky set dressing or something.
Yeah. And because the ensemble's so good, it allows Jack Nicholson to do this amazing dynamic performance. And it's such a sort of balance of tone. It could so easily be over the top. It's a bit like Taxi Driver in that it is the definitive Jack Nicholson performance. And he's a 70s actor like Pacino or De Niro, who's kind of become such a sort of cultural icon. He's kind of like a collection of mannerisms now. Everyone's got like a Jack Nicholson impression.
Yeah, and also no one, I mean, a bit like those guys, they seem to have turned into the impersonations of themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
No one is waiting for the next great Jack Nicholson performance now.
But then it's kind of cool to watch this 70s movie like, oh, you are the greatest actor ever.
Yeah.
He's like incredible in the movie. And he's kind of balanced out by Louise Fletcher's chilling Nurse Ratched. And what's so terrifying about it is, like, she's so convinced she's in the right. She thinks she's a good person.
Yeah. It's an interesting depiction of the way in which people who see themselves as trying to keep order or, like, keeping things, like, safe and calm, like, their actions are indistinguishable from someone who's just shoring up their own power. That she comes off like a complete megalomaniac, basically.
Yeah.
But that you can very clearly see how she isn't thinking of herself as trying to ensure that she remains the sort of queen of the ward, but is just trying to, you know, that there's a structure that has to be kept in place and that, you know, you got to make sure people know where they stand.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as you're saying, like, the ending is one of the best endings ever.
It's got a great ending.
I think it's that sort of thing of, like, you get to know the characters so well in the first hour and a half that the last 20 minutes are this succession of huge emotional gut punches. Really puts you through the ringer. And then ends on this moment, which is so... It would be so shit in any other film, but the film has worked so hard by this point that it's kind of transcendent.
It's incredible. It's incredible cinematic catharsis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, 3 stars?
3 stars. Out of 3. A solid...
100%.
Full, 100% full marks.
Looks like Sam's got a film to review. He's just getting ready now. Hey Sam, here's a few tips for you that I hope are gonna help you out. You got
gotta come prepared, try not to rush, speak directly into the mic. Don't sort of use filler words too much, and try to avoid talking total shite. Okay, start reviewing now.
Sam, I heard you saw a film as emotionally powerful.
Oh, man. I know that they form a little family unit in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But I don't think that has nearly as much to say about the notion of human bonds.
Family.
As the Fast and Furious franchise, fascinating franchise, delighted to have it back on the podcast. It feels like an old friend because we reviewed Fast and Furious 7 whenever that came out.
A couple of years ago.
And now they've produced Fast and Furious 8, which was released in the US under the title The Fate of the Furious. A little bit of wordplay. But over here, it just came out as Fast and Furious 8, which I found
They've done that a few times.
I found that very disappointing. Well, they had that with 7. That had a bunch of different titles. Like, I think in the US, it was Furious 7, it was called. And over here, it was just Fast and Furious 7. They feel like in the US, they're more used to these unconventional naming like sequels. And over here, they don't...
They can't handle it. Well, there hasn't been a Fast and Furious movie in years now. I've seen similar titled films, but I don't know who is this. This is my British guy voice. I live in Luton. Just waiting for another Fast and Furious movie.
I'm born and raised in Slough. That's me. What's with
I remember you? Fast and Furious and Too Fast, Too Furious. But I ain't been a Fast and Furious movie in about 10,000 movies.
Yeah, the weird stiff upper lip yokels of the British are to not be able to handle that. So it's just got a normal name. That was my first disappointment and my only disappointment, because otherwise I kind of enjoyed the movie. I thought it was good.
Cool.
It's hard to know where to set up, you know. Have you been watching all these 7 films in this franchise? You're ready to hear the beginning of the plot of the next one? Basically, for newcomers to franchise, I think the whole thing can be summarized as a bunch of drag racing kind of low-level criminals have morphed over the course of 7 movies into like an international gang of spies and sort of superheroes, and now it's like the Bond franchise where it started out like some sort of cheap thriller. It's kind of weird. And in this one, they pick up after the events of the 7th film, in which the villain was Jason Statham, and they're on this kind of trend now where the villain like each villain is related to the previous one or something.
Sure.
And all these characters just stay in the franchise. It's incredible.
Brilliant.
They don't jettison their characters at all. So Jason Statham is in prison after they defeated him in the 7th movie, but like a new villain arises in the form of Charlize Theron.
Ooh.
And she's a sexy, evil hacker, and she somehow convinces Dominic Toretto, the hero of the Fast and Furious franchise, played by Vin Diesel, to turn against his teammates, his gang of international spies.
His family. Oh my god.
They love family. That's his family.
He loves family.
Nothing is more important to him than his family. But he betrays his family.
Dear God.
He goes rogue. And, you know, then they've got to deal with him as well as Charlize Theron. And then they need to get Jason Statham to kind of help them out. Here's a quick clip. It is from the beginning of the film, which it starts in Havana. Vin Diesel is on a honeymoon with his beautiful wife, played by Michelle Rodriguez. And he finds out that his cousin is going to be gypped out of his ride by some unscrupulous sort of wheeler dealer. And Vin agrees to race that guy in order to get his cousin's car back. And the guy has the fastest car in Havana. And his cousin has the slowest car in Havana. Opposite ends of the league table. Here's the clip.
I appreciate what you're trying to do. My car is the slowest car on the island.
Was. Pull the seats, the doors, the battery. If it ain't the motor, take it off.
Laughing gas?
Nah, Fed. This is Cuban Nas.
You guys are crazy. What are you doing?
Poor man's turbo. Pull the vacuum line and hold on. Old trick the bus used to play in case of emergencies.
You know that's way too much boost for that engine.
It's gonna be fast.
It's gonna be a bomb.
Only needs to go a mile.
Charming stuff. Excellent. Very exciting. Good car action. Yeah, so I'm quite fond of the Fast and Furious franchise. It's got the atmosphere of a daytime TV melodrama, basically, but they have like the budget of, you know, a massive worldwide blockbuster. It's like cost $150 million to make. But they feel like when the movie is almost the most comfortable is in scenes of these people hanging out with cheesy music playing and them sort of gazing into each other's eyes and saying how important family is to them. It's a bit like the atmosphere of Vin Diesel's Instagram, you know?
Right,
it's really
right.
seeped into the film. It's this kind of brotherly love, very Christian.
Yeah.
And that kind of sits alongside this Bond film style car chases and explosions. And also the contractual obligation to include bums and bikini babes and stuff.
Sure.
Which it's getting harder and harder to force that in, you know?
Right.
Considering the bulk of the movie involves chasing international terrorists, they've got to really struggle to find the sort of party scenes to put the babes in. So in this, the beginning of this one, when they go to Havana, it's
some
warm
babes.
In Havana, they've got a hot climate. You know how in most parts of the world they have car racing festivals with just, it looks like spring break or something.
Sure, sure, yeah, yeah.
Wherever these people go in the world, something like that is going on. There's like constant cheering crowds.
Chicks love cars.
Yeah, and like chicks, you know, in a state of undress. You have to be at least this hot to attend this crowd of people watching a drag race, basically.
Of course.
And, you know, whatever, that's part of it. I mean, it's obviously dumb and obviously like objectifying and sexist and stuff, but I feel like no one cares that much.
Sure.
I don't even know why they bother putting it in. Like, no one's going to see this movie unless there's like at least one bum in the trailer. But there's just something inherently appealingly earnest about it, and it's such a good tonic to the po-face fucking perfume advert Bond movies. Any day of the week, I'd rather see this film, which is just full of humor, both intentional and unintentional. There's some genuinely funny jokes in it, like that they meant to be funny. And there's also a lot of things that I'm not sure they did mean to be funny that are hilarious. It's just sort of very comfortable in its own skin. You know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah, it knows what it is.
It knows what it is, and it's not trying to like take on airs and graces that it doesn't deserve. It's very sort of obvious trash, basically, but with this fairly appealing strain of sentimentality. And the death of Paul Walker, who is the star of the franchise in the first 7 installments, has just layered on extra levels,
right?
You know. And that movie ended with this rather, you know, kind of sweet, really, tribute to him, where a computer-generated version of him drives off into the sunset. And that he comes up a couple times in this film.
Right.
He's not dead in the world, but he kind of is. Like, they sort of talk about him like he's just not around anymore.
Right.
He's sort of retired from there. Yeah. And those moments, I mean, they do feel genuine because, obviously, you know, he made all these movies with the same
group
of people.
Sure, of course.
And, yeah, so that's kind of sweet in a way. They also have... They're sort of leaning further and further into the broad comedy, which I think is only a good thing. There's quite a good scene early on in which The Rock is like the manager of a girls' soccer team, and he's like makes them do the haka, like the sort of New Zealand haka. There's this
sure.
whole scene of like all these girls playing football and doing the haka, and he's like cheering them on and stuff. And they're obviously so delighted with this joke because it goes on for quite a long time. And he is generally on very good form throughout. And also Jason Statham is brilliant in it. An asset to any film. I'm so glad they brought him back. He is very funny, and he's basically playing his character from Spy now.
Right, brilliant.
Like in the 7th movie, he was like, you know, a terrifying threat, and like they basically played him straight. And now he's just the guy from Spy.
Brilliant.
And it is great. It's really funny.
Well, I would say, like, you know, the movie has 3 bald, muscly men, but I much prefer Statham and Dwayne The Rock Johnson because they always layer their performances with lots of humor and charisma. I think Vin buys into it a bit too much sometimes. Like,
yeah.
You were saying, that sort of Instagram-esque.
I mean, that's definitely true. Vin is certainly the least appealing of the 3.
But he's got the dramatic...
He's got to carry the sort of dramatic weight of it.
I see.
But I think it's like the fact that he believes in it so much is almost what sells it. You know, that he's kind of lame and dumb. But he's in like what to me is like a soap opera. To him is like actual opera.
I think that's why...
It's like real tragedy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why his other franchises fail. Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody cares about The Last Witch Hunter because he's, like, playing a similar, like, awesome guy but doesn't have the same kind of cultural baggage as the Fast and Furious franchise, so it feels less earned in those parts.
Yeah, well, what personality he has is on the screen in this movie. But, like, he's probably really boring to hang out with, but if you just take those aspects of him that would be really tedious if you were, like, meeting him at a party, but blow it up to sort of melodramatic extremes... It becomes fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know, everyone is kind of committed to it, and they have a genuine amount of imagination with the stunts as well. Like, the progression of the stunts in all these films have to get crazier and crazier in order to generate the correct amount of astonishment from Tyrese Gibson's character.
Damn.
Yeah. But it means that they're complete. At this point, it's just utter not. It's just so stupid.
Sure.
But it's just fun that... It looks like they got a bunch of guys in a room drinking way too much coffee and just spitballing the most random shit for like a couple of weeks and then just picked the craziest ideas and decided to put them in the movie.
Awesome.
And I mean, I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain the invention for too much longer, but it's enough. In this movie, it's enough. There's nothing that's quite as cool as the planes falling out of the sky they had in the seventh movie, but there's still some, you know, fun
stuff. The submarine, right?
The submarine is pretty cool, and there's this like bonkers sequence in New York with like 1,000 AI-controlled cars going wild. You know, it's just completely ridiculous. It does get, I would say, it sort of starts to lose steam by the end. The explosions, you start to get a bit like, because it's long, this movie. It's not a short movie, and it certainly doesn't end too soon. I think I was definitely ready for the end. I was a bit like, okay. Then in general, you know, it will not enrich your life in any way, but it made me laugh a lot. And, you know, it's like a popcorn. It's a pure popcorn movie where no brain cells is in danger of being engaged, and it will just make you laugh and you can enjoy the explosions and enjoy the sort of man love.
My favorite film stars Bridget Bardot. She's the queen, but she wants to be in radio. So she starts a podcast with her friends, and the terrorists try to stop her, but she beats them in the end.
And finally, I didn't really think about him finally, but luckily Stephen Lee sent me a tweet he read, which amused him. The tweet was from acclaimed director M. Night Shyamalan, who seems to be back.
People like Split. Yeah, it was like, a big. Finally, he's made a film that wasn't worse than his previous film.
Yeah, so he's back, and he tweeted, "Writing climax of new film, had to step away, heart pounding, too scared and worried for the characters. Writing really is like acting."
Oh wow. Danny, you're a writer.
Sure.
Do you ever find when you're writing of any kind, not necessarily dramatic, do you ever find that you get too invested in and just got to stop?
Just step away. I pass out. That's what
just,
I do now.
You just pass out. You faint. You constantly do at all things.
No, I'm not on the same level as Shyamalan, obviously.
No, you're no Shyamalan. He probably has to write another draft with a happy ending just so he can write the draft of the film that he'll actually make.
Exactly.
He's got to type away, like, and then a delivery of flowers happened. And everyone
had a hot stone massage.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they all died. Oh, no! But they ended up in heaven. Oh, lovely. I was looking at the replies to this tweet. A lot of people saying, yeah, it's a Split. Very enthusiastic. He's got a fan base. One guy called Darcy Van Polgeest, which I hope is his real name, said, I'm soaked in sweat after a good day at the desk.
But what is his job, though?
He's a writer director. I went on his bio.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Because I thought perhaps he was like
a sweat machine tester.
Yeah. Well, just there's got to be exhausting things you can do.
Have you seen Split? I've not seen Split.
I haven't seen Split. I haven't seen it.
But
flat out.
I think I've guessed the twist already.
Let's hear your guess.
Just everyone in the film is James McAvoy.
Oh, shit.
He just kidnapped himself and imagined four other women, but it was just him the whole time.
That is a good guess, to be honest. I'd be surprised.
And then he went to his therapist, and like, always seems a therapist, but the therapist is also just
him. Also him. Everyone is him.
Yeah. He basically doesn't leave his room the whole movie.
Right, like, at the end, it's just a shot of... It's like sort of Kaiser Soze thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Except even the policeman is him.
Yeah.
He gets arrested, but that's him, and he just, like, he hasn't even left his room.
Yeah, and then you watch the whole movie again, like, fast forward, but it's just the same actions, but he's doing all of it.
Oh, man, that
was
so
good. He's been like, you know, he's got the handcuffs.
Oh, it's like Fight Club.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of Fight Club, when you see him in the security camera fighting himself. Yeah, that would actually be great, especially if it was, like, really elaborately choreographed, so he was somehow doing everything
well. Yeah. And there's obviously scenes where there's loads of people, but it's like he just does it himself. Like he's like juggling between three people, and then like the security footage shows him doing this incredible bit of like acrobatics.
There should be some scene in the movie where he goes to like an AA meeting, or he's on like a psych ward with other patients, and they're all talking. There's like a whole circle of them, you know, like 15 people talking to each other. And then in the replay version, he's just leaping back and forth between the chairs, getting really out of breath, sweating as much as Shyamalan over his desk. Do you want to see it? Is it a
Split
film that appeals to you? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge McAvoy fan, but it looks like he's going full ham.
But you want to see him.
Yeah, I want to see
him go really, you know, it's like Diesel with his incredible like Christian personality. You want to see the most annoying trait of an actor exploited to the full. And McAvoy is an overactor.
Yeah, I mean, Split is just a kind of cool, like, almost like audition piece for any actor. You know what I mean? I quite like to see Split with just like another actor do that. Just play 9 characters.
Yeah, just keep...
let's see it. It's like you know, a showreel, right?
What if Gary Oldman made that film?
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be fucking because good. That guy disappears into a role. You actually believe it.
You believe it.
With him, you wouldn't even realize that, like, what the concept of the film was, because you just wouldn't understand that it was the same guy.
What was Split personality? What? One guy?
There was loads of guys. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the twist wouldn't work. Because the acting would be too good.
Such a good actor that the twist simply wouldn't work. Well, all right, we should get off the flight path before we get run over by an airplane.
Maybe. Do you know what would have been great? If we'd actually planned an M. Night Shyamalan-style twist to end this segment with, twist. Sam, but you've been talking to yourself this whole time.
Fuck you, suckers. 115 episodes of me talking to myself, doing my Danny impression, which is quite subtle because our voices aren't that different.
Yes.
That was me. I said yes, but why would I, as my other personality, do a voice?
Because you're so distinct. You're so... you know, you're inhabiting the role so much that you do something which is counterintuitive if you were doing it yourself. That's like a triple bluff.
That's a good explanation, and I'm sticking to it. All right, guys, that's the end of this week's film chat. Join us next week when we will be reviewing what?
Just some films, isn't it?
Just some films. I don't know what they're going to be, but they're going to have been seen. We're recording this quite early in the week, so it's going to be probably a lot of news. And I'm sure we'll have seen a whole bunch of movies. It's going to be a corker, I've no doubt about it.
Bye.
Bye.
And also Jeremy Corbyn, by the way. Yes, big, big time. I like the idea of people telling the truth. I like them to get to the bottom of things, really. In our governments, we have a lot of subterfuge. We got people like Jamie Dimon running around, and we got all this, you know, the LIBOR thing, you guys, everything we go through. We got all this stuff. Now we got the Panama thing. I mean, what is it? Why doesn't anybody want to pay taxes and just fix the country, make everybody have a good life? And, well, you know, it's really crazy. So we got to fix it. I think it would make a great PM. Oh, yeah, way better than Cameron. And forget about... Listen, look at your history, for crying out loud. You know what I mean? You know, little sketchy guy hanging out with George Bush. What was his name? Blair. Okay.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.